There are many Filipino superstitions related to pregnancy, perhaps because it leads to a very special family milestone, the birth of another life into this world. And perhaps the most common superstition is that a pregnant woman should be very careful of aswang or any entity that could be after her child's life. You're listening to Stories After Dark, a Philippine true crime and mystery podcast powered by Anchor and released exclusively on Spotify, with new episodes out every week. These are two stories related to pregnancy, published on the No Sleep subreddit by two different Redditors. The first one is I Never Want to Do Charity Work Again by Zamil Akhtar, with Reddit username Zam Akhtar. And the second story is A Dangerous Pregnancy by Arcana120. Lending their voices briefly in this episode are Grace and Mimay, hosts of Huwag Kang Lilingon, a Spotify-exclusive horror comedy podcast also based in the Philippines. You can listen to Huwag Kang Lilingon exclusively on Spotify, and you can read other No Sleep stories written by Zamil on Reddit and his website zamilakhtar.com. The first story, I Never Want to Do Charity Work Again. I've always yearned to help others, to save the needy from suffering. You see, the world doesn't need imagined monsters. Plenty of real ones haunt humanity every day. Disease, poverty, oppression, all scarier than the demons in horror stories. Or so I thought. 7 years ago, the charity I worked for sent me to the Philippines to help a few villages prepare evacuation plans in case of flooding. The poverty was bad enough. The first village lay next to a dirty, trash-soaked river. The Nipa houses rested on stilts that stood upon caked mud amid a sprawling jungle. Two opposing tree stumps with perched buckets is how I describe the basketball court. Despite this, the villagers exuded joy. During the afternoon siesta, men would gather around plastic tables and pass around coconut wine while playing cards or mahjong. And in the evening, they'd congregate in the village captain's house and sing 90s classics on the karaoke machine, sometimes until the roosters crowed in the morning. They got the nipa wood for the houses from mangroves that lined the river's edge like a wall of roots. As strong as the material was, a fierce flood could annihilate an entire nipa village in an hour. A successful evacuation requires an easy path to high ground, and so from the comfort of my hotel suite in Cebu, I drew a route through the jungle and up the nearby mountain, which loomed over the village like a titan. Aside from that, I spent my time at the hotel phoning corporate social responsibility heads, usually while drinking whiskey in the bathtub, and after much cajoling, raised funds for rowboats, life vests, canned food, loudspeakers, and other essentials for surviving a flood. It was all going smoothly, until I drove back to the village and presented my plan. The village captain, whom everyone called grandmother because she was the eldest, had prepared a feast for me, which she had cooked in literal holes in the grass.
"No one here is old enough,"
she said while we were having lunch under billowing black clouds.
"But I remember what happened at that mountain."
I loved eating on a banana leaf, but cupping the rice and meat with my hands still seemed so awkward. "Good things, I hope," I said. She hesitated, chewing her food slowly, then shook her head and said,
"Aswang lived there."
I didn't speak Tagalog or the local language of that region. I simply stared back, my eyebrows raised. "I'm sorry, what's an aswang?" I asked. The village captain told me a story. When she was a young girl, the village was located on the other side of the mountain, away from the river, and it was well off because the men worked at the mountain's tin mine and the price of tin was high. But strange things began happening. A few men who went to work in the mine didn't come out quite the same. Some of the wives, specifically the pregnant ones, would claim that creatures called aswang had taken their husbands' forms. They'd wake up in the night and see their husbands staring intently at their swollen bellies, slobber dripping from their mouths. I laughed in the village captain's face, thinking it a joke. How rude and foolish I was. But I had four other villages to deal with during that trip. "I'm afraid there's no time to change the evacuation plan," I said. "Typhoon season is here after all." The village captain persisted.
"Because of those aswang, no baby was born in the village for a whole year. The mothers always disappeared before they could give birth. Only when the tin mine went bust and we relocated to this river did things return to normal."
I understand your fears, I said, even though I didn't. But it's the only high ground for miles. It even has caves for shelter, and it's an easy climb. There's simply no better place to save everyone's lives. The other villagers I talked to didn't share her concern, which reassured me because if they too believed such a ridiculous tale, I'd be forced to find another site. I stayed overnight intending to practice my evacuation plan with everyone in the morning before I moved on to the next village, which was on a different island, but we'd never get to practice it. At sunrise, the sky bellowed and opened. The wind screamed and howled as if some mighty god were blowing upon the world and flinging coconut and papaya trees like twigs. The bulging river overflowed past the mangroves, and the stilts supporting the Nipa huts weren't sturdy enough to keep the water from sucking them up. The world knew this catastrophe as Typhoon Haiyan, but there they called it Typhoon Yolanda. Over 6,000 people died, another 1,700 went missing, one of them because of me. Though I earnestly wanted to help when the floodwater surged with the wind's scourge, I wished I were back in my comfy hotel suite. Still, I did my job. As soon as the storm began, I gathered the villagers at the basketball court. Then we marched along a dirt path through the jungle and toward the mountain. I ensured the children, elderly, and pregnant women among us walked in front so they wouldn't lag behind. Because I'd scouted it a few days ago, I knew that the trek to and up the mountain would be straightforward. A winding path brought us high enough where we could wait out the storm. Watching the villagers huddle together amid the caverns, still cheerful despite the calamity, I finally felt I'd done some good. As I passed around blankets, canned food, and life vests, I realized how much more fulfilling this was than phoning corporate heads while drinking whiskey in a tub. It all started to go wrong when a young man came up to the village captain and me. I'll never forget his pockmarked and narrow face and the way he waved his arms in panic, as if he were trying to block a basketball shot. The village captain translated his pleading.
His wife went to relieve herself and now she's missing.
I pounced at another chance to help, to fulfill my heart's yearning, so I organized a search party. Amid apocalyptic rain and screeching wind, I and several other able men and women scouted the mountain. When we failed to find her together, we divided into groups of two. And when that didn't work, we split up individually, each taking a life vest, flashlight, and blowhorn to alert each other in case of danger. I decided to descend and search around the mountain's base. After 30 minutes of trudging against the gale and through the mud, I discovered a wide cave within which was utter darkness. As I stared at the mouth, I heard a woman's whimper, followed by what I can only describe as a deep, throaty cough that lasted a few seconds too long. Or was it simply the wind scathing the cave walls? "Hello?" I shouted. I considered using the blowhorn, but decided to confirm what it was before alerting others. I grabbed my flashlight and continued inside. A damp, fleshy smell shot into my nose. I caught the woman's name. Pained whimpers sounded back. I hurried forward and stepped on something sharp that almost split my shoe. I pointed my flashlight at it, a broken cart track. I had entered a mine. Around me I saw wheelbarrows of ore covered in pounds of dust. A tin mine. Immediately I recalled the story of the Aswang that impersonated the miners. A tightness gripped my chest. I didn't believe in imagined monsters, but who knows what could have been waiting in the darkness ahead. I wanted to turn and run, but pushed on, reminding myself why I was there, to save people. The whimpering was just ahead. I wished I could snap my fingers and teleport back to the hotel, where I could hide underneath the silky duvet on the super king bed. How cozy it would be to wait out the storm there. My heartbeat surged as I squeezed my flashlight to settle the trembles. I stepped onward and shined my light forward. A pregnant woman lay writhing on the floor. Above her stood the same pockmark-faced man who'd been waving his arms earlier. He hunched over her. His mouth widened and slobber dripped from it. "Hello," I said. "Glad you found her. Is she all right?" He ignored me. His mouth stretched beyond what was humanly possible while emitting a throaty wail. And then a hand slithered out of his mouth. The arm the hand was attached to had three elbows, and they bent at odd angles as the hand stretched toward his wife's ripe belly. I pulled out my blowhorn and pressed. It blared like the trumpet of Judgment Day, echoing against the cave walls. The thing snapped its head toward me, the hand coming out of its mouth contorted with bony snaps until all three elbows straightened. It grabbed at my face, just missing as I backed away and turned. I'd said I always wanted to help people, but in that moment, as my heart quavered and panic engulfed every sense, I only wanted to help myself. I ran until I was out of the cave and breathless, back amid the deluge. Instead of climbing up the mountain, I sprinted through the jungle toward the village, which was nearly submerged and drifting with the tide. Water reached my waist, but still I trudged through, my life vest keeping me from drowning. And then the current swept me. It carried me through a thicket of downed trees, washed away Nipa huts and plastic. Though terrifying, this was heaven compared to facing the creature in that cave. Half an hour later, some brave volunteers in a paddle boat rescued me. I told them I was running from an aswang, but they laughed, thinking me some crazy foreigner. I spent a few days in a shelter, then returned to Cebu, resigned from the charity, and once the storm had passed, took the first flight home. A while later, I heard from a colleague that the villagers survived, save for one pregnant woman who had gone missing. I've had 7 years to think about it since then, but my conclusion has never changed. By ignoring the village captain's warning and guiding them to that cursed mountain, I caused something unmentionable to happen to that woman and her unborn child. I'd done exactly the opposite of what I yearned to do. I'd hurt instead of helped, because of my arrogance. The guilt still eats me. I don't dare try to help anyone anymore. I'm a corporate drone now, slaving every day to make someone else rich. Better than hurting others with my good intentions. The second story, a dangerous pregnancy. In my crib of civilization, despite the advent of mobile devices and computers, people still believe in monsters, ghosts, spirits, and sprites. That in every nook, hill, and cranny, one has to be very careful. That every form and stage of human life is vulnerable and quite a fancy to shifters, ghouls, and other denizens of the night. That belief, prayers, and with luck, a huge bag of salt will do more than enough damage to save oneself from being prey to those things. I personally believed all of that half-heartedly, at least until I became pregnant. I was 25 at the time and being forced in a situation to move back in with my parents. Though not happy with me being an unwed single mother, the idea of a grandchild thrilled them, and thus they did everything in their power to make things comfortable for me and my unborn child. Working from home and wanting to save money also made it possible for me to focus on my pregnancy at home and be close again to my mom, whom I have not spoken to for 5 years. Traditions were kept, and among those were a lot about pregnancies, and I do mean tons. Don't stay between and under doorways or you'll have a difficult childbirth. Don't stare at or have cravings for inanimate objects, lest your child become sectioned like them or mute. Don't watch horror movies or TV shows as they're bad for the baby. When a pregnant woman asks for something, you have to give it to her, otherwise she might lose the baby. Like I said, tons of traditions. I found out that there's a special type of massage done at home for pregnancies, and during my 6th month, just after having that massage, I was told by my mother not to sleep alone.
"You will attract a lot of them tonight,"
Mom said.
"Because of your baby."
Though a bit muddled and lethargic from the hour-long treatment, I promised I wouldn't sleep but said that I needed to rest and warm up a bit as the air suddenly seemed colder. A few minutes later and I found myself dozing off. It was past 9 p.m. when I heard a swooshing sound coming from outside. Mind you, we were in a residential area and our bungalow was about 10 minutes from the main road to the city by car, so it was weird to hear such sounds. It couldn't have been bats because they sounded too large. The swooshing sound seemed to be made by large wings and was getting closer, and as it did, there was also an eerie giggling sound coming from the window. I couldn't care less if it was dark because the lights were off in the house. I jumped up, forgetting that I had a huge belly for such a small frame, and I made a dash to my parents' room crying,
"Mama! A shifter's at the window!"
The door burst open and Mom dragged me in. Amid scolding and reprimands for sleeping alone, we stayed up till my dad got home from work. I was kept under close watch after that. We continued to hear flyers in the next few days, possibly manananggals, aswangs, or other local monsters. They stopped coming after an aunt of mine placed some objects around the house to put them off. I thought that that was the end of it, until we found out a month later that Bettina, our neighbor a couple of blocks away, died horribly after they discovered her with her belly ripped open. She was 4 months pregnant. After that, I could never sleep alone again at night. Thank you for listening to Stories After Dark, a Spotify exclusive powered by Anchor. Stay tuned next week for a new episode, and to make sure you're updated about the show, please follow Stories After Dark on your Spotify app as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This episode was produced by me, Derek, and the stories Grace, Mimai, and Dai narrated were written by Redditors Zam Akhtar and Arcana120. Music is by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com, and the artworks used for the Instagram post of this episode is by Luis Oliveros with the Instagram handle Greyweed. You can find Grace and Mimai's podcast Wag Kang Lilingon exclusively on Spotify. If you'd like to see the references used for this episode, suggest cases, send personal stories, or further support the show, you can go to storiesafterdark.ph for more information. All of the links are in the episode description.